Binge drinking is defined as consuming a large amount of alcohol in a short period of time, typically with the goal of becoming intoxicated. Now, this type of drinking can have a range of negative health effects, including increased risk of accidents, injuries, and chronic health conditions, such as liver disease, high blood pressure, and certain types of cancer. But does that mean all drinking is bad for the health? Well, I'm Scotty Nell Hughes, and on this edition of 360 View, we are going to look at what is causing the rise of alcoholism around the world and what ties alcohol might have to controversial social issues like the transgender debate. Let's get started. Binge drinking is a rising trend with dangerous consequences. As people are being released from pandemic lockdowns, there is a draw to go out and catch up on the times you have missed. Well, our national correspondent Roxana Solano tells us about one incident of mass binge drinking at a university in America.
Well, Scotty, college students are on one of the groups experts are worried about binge drinking as they're trying to make up for lost years separated from their peers during the pandemic. University of Massachusetts is warning students about the new drink combination, causing 28 ambulances to be called to off-campus parties. TikTok is being blamed for circulating the drink trend and ingredients. The social media platform is already in hot water with the U.S. government as bills are being floated in Congress to ban TikTok. The drink deemed Borks, or Blackout Rage Gallons, is encouraging students to binge drink copious amounts of alcohol from gallon jugs. The infamous drink is trending on TikTok with videos showing Bork recipes, Bork challenges, and Bork puns.
Most importantly, you have to name it, and it's got to be something with Borg. And so, basically, Gen Z just, like, drinks this.
Students were seen carrying the jugs at the annual unsanctioned UMass student event, Blarney Blowout. They were seen naming their jugs with Borg puns on social media while clearly intoxicated.
Borgarita!
Rick and Morty!
Gatlin Borg!
My Borg is named Borgleaf Clover!
Jason Borg!
People in the comments claim the goal is to have your own drink to bring to parties to prevent spreading germs or getting sleep with a date rape drug. Students promote drinking this combination of water, electrolytes, and vodka because they think it will help them stay hydrated while they drink.
And then lastly, because it's only 1 p.m., we're gonna add some liquid IV so we don't get hungover at midnight. I'm just gonna throw this whole pack in here. I shake it all up.
But this misconception is leading to alcohol poisoning. Since the pandemic, we're seeing a rise in binge drinking. During the pandemic, we saw an overall decline in drinking. Most were isolated or at home as classes move online. Group activities or parties where drinking would be prevalent simply were not happening. This isolation contributed to mental health problems and substance abuse across the board. So even though we saw a lower amount of people drinking, there was a massive rise in people binge drinking. In 2020, alcohol death across the globe increased by 20%, causing the World Health Organization to raise the alarm. For women, Russia and Australia have the highest numbers of alcoholism dependence, followed by Norway, Colombia, and Hungary. Russia reaches top of the list for males suffering from alcoholism, followed by Hungary, Lithuania, and South Korea. However, now we're back. People are going to parties, college, bars, and restaurants are open again. The National Institute of Health is worried about what they're calling the alcohol deprivation effect. People tend to really rebound in drinking after a period of not drinking. Experts say they're not expecting you to stop drinking. It is, after all, a staple in our society. Beers after work, to unwind, happy hours at 5 o'clock, mimosas at brunch, or Bloody Marys, or popping a champagne for a birthday. But it is important to rethink your drinking and make sure you stay within a safe limit. For 360 View, I'm Roxana Solano. Back to you, Scotty.
Today, we are thrilled to be joined by Dr. George Kube, the director of the National Institute on Alcohol Abuse and Alcoholism at the National Institutes of Health. We are so glad to have you today. Let's get right into it. Dr. Cube, we are seeing a rising trend online with college-age students posting videos about drinking Borgs or Blackout Rage gallons. These mix half a gallon of vodka with electrolytes, and students promote these as a way to help them stay hydrated while they drink. Scientifically, is there any truth to this?
To date, there's no real evidence to suggest that this approach has any harm reduction validity, but there hasn't been much research on it either. Basically, you're talking about a half a gallon of vodka, which, you know, if you 40% alcohol, if diluted with water, you're talking about, you know, the equivalent of, you know, two bottles of wine at a minimum, and a fortified wine at that, so about 20% alcohol. And honestly, if one person ingests that, you're really going to reach a lethal dose. So it's you know, we used to worry about students having alcohol from punch bowls, but Borgs are like self-made punch bowls to go.
Well, as we saw in our report, this misconception led to about 28 ambulances rushing to the University of Massachusetts for students suffering from alcohol poisoning. Now, you said you didn't think the electrolytes actually help, but there's been no research. What are the dangers you know of from drinking half a gallon of vodka?
Well, the simple answer is death, okay? Because basically, you have in a half a gallon of vodka about 40 standard drinks or 40 shots. A shot is 1.5 ounces. That's a standard drink for distilled beverages, 12 ounces of beer for a beer, and 5 ounces of wine. Those are a standard drink. And, you know, when a male drinks about 5 or a female 4, you're at 0.08, which is the binge level. You double that, you're at 0.16, which is at the blackout level, thus the name for Borgs. And if you double that, you're at the lethal dose of alcohol, which is about 0.35 gram percent. Not that anybody's going to remember that, but, you know, the legal limit is 0.08. So 4 times the legal limit, which is we consider a binge, is basically the lethal dose, 50% for alcohol for a person of, you know, 150 pounds. So, you know, that's one of the dangers. I mean, you can then go down the list. I mean, there can be ataxia, inability to operate, heavy machinery like an automobile, more likely to have accidents, falling off a fence or a wall, or, you know, many different things in that realm that drinking in the binge level and above, not to mention blackouts, which is where you don't remember what transpired when you're drinking. And so I think anyone can imagine what problems that could lead to in a party situation.
Now, you said before, people were drinking less during the pandemic. And are we seeing people drink more? Now, during the pandemic, restaurants were closed. People actually were not going out to bottomless brunches or going out to campus parties. People were drinking less. Are we seeing an increase in drinking now that we are returning to normalcy?
You know, you asked earlier about a phenomenon that's well established in the alcohol field, which we call the alcohol deprivation effect. So people who have not been drinking for a while for whatever reason and then resume drinking often overshoot. I hate to say it, but not only do people do it, but primate monkeys do it, rats do it, and mice do it. Okay, so this seems to be a universal phenomenon of overdrinking when having been deprived. So that's one thing that people should watch out for as the pandemic, moves us back as the decline in pandemic issues moves us back to our regular social interactions. So I think alcohol, when you go past moderate drinking level, becomes a pathogen. And I think we really need to understand that and understand that it accounts for 5% of of cancer in the United States. And that's according to the National Cancer Institute, with whom we work at NIH, of course.
Now, we have heard of an increase in binge drinking. This is specifically amongst women. What are some of the concerns you have in the NIH with this increase in binge drinking?
Anything past the dietary guidelines, which are 2 drinks a day for males, 1 drink a day for females, you basically increase the likelihood of problems associated with alcohol. And they, you know, alcohol affects 200 different organs in the body and exacerbates many different disease conditions, everything from diabetes to heart disease to problems with liver function. In particular, half of liver disease deaths now in the United States are attributable to alcohol. So you basically are seeing a major concern about health in general with increased alcohol use. And you know, I guess if there's anything I'd like to get across is that people understand what a standard drink is. When we say 2 drinks a day, we're not talking about the New Yorker cartoon. I think it was the New Yorker cartoon where, you know, I only have 1 glass of wine a day, but, you know, the glass is the size of a liter. So, you know, I think that's an important issue that I think the public should understand. What is a standard drink and what is considered by the CDC moderate drinking? And again, it's 2 drinks a day for males, 1 drink a day for females.
Now, you said people were drinking less during the pandemic, but there were more deadly cases of drinking during that time. What led to this kind of deadly drinking during the pandemic lockdowns?
It's possible. We really don't have data that's that fine-grained of analysis. What we do know is that there was a 25% increase in deaths associated with alcohol on death certificates in the first year of the pandemic. That increase was sustained and increased even more in the second year of the pandemic. There's increased cirrhosis of the liver and a number of liver transplants during the period of the pandemic. Car crash fatalities increased for the first time in a long time in 2020. And the percentage of emergency room visits involving alcohol consumption also increased. And what we're picking up is that about 25% of individuals increased their consumption, but that group tends to be individuals who are drinking to cope with the stress that was associated with the pandemic. So it can include, you know, everything from job concerns to a lack of social interaction because we were locked down for long periods of time, and also concerns about even getting sick from the virus.
And you were very specific about men. A normal amount is about 2 drinks. Women, a normal amount is 1 drink. In America, we recently have dealt with these mass shootings where people were very confused about the identity of the shooter, who came out to be transgender. Now, transgender transitions are kind of coming about more and more, and more often it can cause sometimes confuse things. When you were talking about these limits for drinking, do hormones or these transgender surgeries change that? Or even if somebody is transitioning, should they be sticking to the biological amounts when you say these limitations for male or female?
You know, that's we just don't have any data on that. I mean, it's a good question. It's a great scientific question. But I really, you know, I think it mostly has to do the difference between males and females. And it's a small difference in some level. If you look at the alcohol charts, it is largely due to body water distribution. And so, you know, females in general have more body water, less body water, excuse me, and more fats per kilogram than men. And because of that, the alcohol tends to hang out in the water component. Men have more body water per kilogram than females. So that accounts for a slight change in blood alcohol level. But the other major change is that men are just larger than females. So I would think the body weight would trump everything else, to be honest with you. And but I don't have any data. It's a very good scientific question whether you know, hormonal changes would affect the blood alcohol metabolism and absorption. But for now, we don't have any data that I'm aware of on that.
Thank you, Dr. George Kube, the director of the National Institute on Alcohol Abuse and Alcoholism at the National Institute of Health. Now, after the break, we're going to continue our conversation with Dr. Koob and ask, what can we as individuals do to help identify or prevent this crisis from getting worse?
Forward to talking to you all.
That technology should work for people.
A robot must obey the orders given it by human beings, except where such orders would conflict with the first law.
Show your identification.
We should be very careful about artificial intelligence.
The point, obviously, is to create trust rather than fear.
I would like to take on various jobs.
I mean, with artificial intelligence, we are summoning the demon.
A robot must protect its own existence or its own existence.
Есть места, когда ты выходишь, и, честно говоря, аж волосы шевелятся дыбом, потому что столько мусора. И вот бочки, миллионы бочек. Когда половодье, естественно, это все поднимается, уходит в море.
Зачастую вот экологические все лозунги и экологические мероприятия, они глобально ни на что не влияют. Вот они просто создают видимость движухи. Но глобально человечество как переводило со все увеличивающейся скоростью ресурсы, так и переводит. То есть, ну, тут как бы подход нужно менять.
Какое-то место силы тянет сюда просто. Вот. Очень многие люди, которые здесь раз побывали, потом приезжают снова и снова. Вроде бы разруха, вроде как бы так грустно смотреть, а что-то вот такое в нем есть.
Такая натуральная, чистая Арктика, как она и должна быть в наших глазах.
Чистить Арктику – это не просто какие-то слова, знаете, там какие-то лозунги или что-то еще. Для меня это настоящая судьба.
Это смысл всей моей жизни.
Welcome back. I'm Skynell Hughes, and you are watching 360 View. We're talking about the dangers of binge drinking and alcoholism. We are rejoined by Dr. George Koob, the director of the National Institute on Alcohol Abuse and Alcoholism at the National Institute of Health. Thanks for joining me, doctor. As we are seeing people drinking more, those who binge drink don't necessarily suffer from alcoholism, just maybe lack of education on safe alcohol consumption. But what are some of the signs to look for if you believe a loved one is suffering from alcohol addiction?
We use the term alcohol use disorder now, just for the record. So that means it's a spectrum disorder, and it's mild, moderate, and severe. And what we used to call alcoholism or alcohol addiction or alcohol dependence is probably moderate to severe alcohol use disorder. But we also have introduced the construct recently, myself and Nora Volkoff, the director of the National Institute on Drug Abuse, and a colleague, Tom McClellan, who worked for many, many years in the addiction health services research area, the concept of pre-addiction. So we actually think that the mild alcohol use disorder is a signal that something that you're more likely to have a problem later on. So what are the signs? Well, the first sign I always look for is a deterioration in social interaction or work performance. I mean, you know, for students, it might be, you know, being so hungover after a weekend that they aren't able to turn in the term paper on time, or they're late for the exam, or they haven't studied for the exam. For individuals, maybe it's assignments at work or getting to work on time. These are early signs, but perhaps even earlier sign are deterioration in relationships within family, within friends, you know, the drunken discussions over the phone at night, where clearly the person seems to be, you know, emotionally labile. That means, you know, ranging from one emotion to the other. They're down, they're up, and they seem sound intoxicated. So those are some of the early signs. And I think, you know, so I would say, you know, impairment in occupational and social interactions are some of the earliest signs.
Now, we have spoken about social implications, maybe missing a term paper, mood swings, drunken conversations. What are some of the physical repercussions to alcohol overuse over a long-term period of time, or what some characterize as binge drinking?
Well, yeah, another metric that I should have mentioned is sleep. So alcohol disrupts sleep. You know, it does help you fall asleep slightly, shortens the latency to go to sleep, you know, the time it takes to fall asleep. But unfortunately, you know, it wears off fairly quickly. And so you may wake up in the middle of the night to go to the bathroom, number one, and then you suddenly find your brain is hotwired and, you know, hyperactive, and you can't get back to sleep. And then the next night, you know, so maybe you drink a little more the next night so that you increase the likelihood of falling asleep. But again, you then exacerbate the same problem that you had the night before, and you wake up early and you get into this vicious cycle where actually alcohol can cause sleep problems, and sleep problems can cause more drinking. So that's one physical sign. I mean, other gastrointestinal discomfort. Alcohol can irritate the gut, especially if you're drinking on an empty stomach and not with food. So that's an early physical sign. You could have elevated liver enzymes when you go in for your physical. You know, there are a host of other changes in your body that could be affected. People with a vulnerability to arrhythmias may start showing more arrhythmias, heart arrhythmias, I'm talking about. So, you know, it's like alcohol affects every organ in the body, and it's not a good way when you pass the, you know, dietary guideline levels of drinking.
If someone wants to confront a loved one about high alcohol use, what are some suggestions you have about starting this very delicate conversation?
Yes, absolutely, and a real challenge. And so you don't want to confront someone. That inevitably backfires. We have a resource, I'll maybe get to talk about it at the end, called Rethinking Drinking. You can sometimes point a loved one toward that, or kind of mention that you've looked at this website, and it, you know, it's a website that covers many of the things we have been discussing, but it also, you know, allows you to reevaluate your relationship with alcohol. One thing you can say to someone, you know, is, you know, if you just skip drinking a couple of days, why don't you see how you feel? And what I tell people is, if you feel better when you're not drinking, then your body's trying to tell you something. So listen to your body. Another option is to talk to your primary care doctor. And when the person goes in for a physical, you know, make sure that the physician asks them, or the nurse practitioner, whoever, you know, in the healthcare domain, asks them, how much do you drink? And a very simple version of this is, how much do you drink and how much do your friends drink? And just those two questions. You can do the audit C, which is something that's used professionally, but that basically is similar. It just is, how often do you have a drink containing alcohol? How many drinks do you have on a typical day? And have you ever had more than six drinks or more on a given occasion? And that audit C is part of a bigger screener, but it actually often predicts whether someone is developing an alcohol use problem. Now, I'm not suggesting everybody give the audit C to their loved ones, but I'm just pointing out that, you know, there are questions you can ask that and move in toward a form of motivational interviewing. Like, you know, if you didn't spend so much money on alcohol, you know, maybe you could get that new surfboard, or, you know, maybe you could even upgrade your automobile. You know, people add up how much they actually spend on alcohol when they're starting to get into it. It actually can be substantial. So, you know, those are the approaches that we recommend. Obviously, We have another resource called the NIAAA Treatment Navigator. And if you go on there, you can find out what is an alcohol use disorder and also the spectrum of an alcohol use disorder and the spectrum of treatments. And so there are many counselors that are experts that can help individuals at the beginning of an alcohol problem. There are motivational interviewing groups, cognitive behavioral therapy groups. There are outpatient facilities where you can go in and join some of these treatments just in the evenings, not interfere with your day job, not even interfere with your family life. Maybe have dinner there every few days. So, you know, I think people have to realize that there are multiple ways that you can interface with this problem, but confrontation and yelling and carrying on is only going to backfire, because that just puts people's backs up. It's not a good approach for changing behavior.
Now, some people do say they try to drink coffee. They actually try to chug water, eat a fatty, greasy food. But what is the real thing that will help lower your alcohol intake levels?
Limit your absorption and limit your intoxication. And food on your stomach will do that. It blunts the rising phase of the blood alcohol curve. So if you drink on an empty stomach, and I don't want this used in the wrong way, but you get a very fast rise in blood alcohol level, all right? But if you're having wine with dinner or a beer with dinner or a cocktail with dinner, you'll find that you get a much less steep of a rise in the blood alcohol curve. You end up ultimately absorbing the same amount of alcohol, but the curve is blunted if you have food on your stomach. So that's true. Caffeine doesn't help you at all. I mean, probably it's going to potentiate the dehydration, because it's also a diuretic. Caffeine, you know, people use it to sober up, and there's a problem with that as well, because if you get behind the wheel after you've drunk alcohol and then added caffeine, you know, maybe for a little while you're a little more alert because of the caffeine, but if the caffeine starts to wear off and then you have the alcohol sedative effects, you're just going to have a double whammy. So we don't recommend using caffeine as a sobering agent. The best thing to do is not drink so much. That's the bottom line.
Oh, well, great. We have been speaking with Dr. George Kube, the director of the National Institute on Alcohol Abuse and Alcoholism at the National Institute of Health. Thank you so much for joining us today to discuss this very important and delicate topic. Now, it is recommended individuals limit their alcohol intake to no more than one drink per day for women and no more than two drinks per day for men, and that people who choose to drink do so in moderation and with caution. For those who struggle with alcohol use or binge drinking, the NIH recommends seeking professional help and support to address the issues and prevent future harm. I'm Skynell Hughes, and this has been your 360 view of the news affecting you. Thank you for watching.